The final session of the day is going to change focus and look exclusively at the statutory duties and the rights of children who are going through the NRM process that we've heard about today. And it was very useful that Clara put it into context, because I'll be referring to the NRM throughout this. I'm just going to say a bit about the experiences of our clients in the Law Centre, and then look at the Northern Ireland statistics, and then take a chronological look at the policy and legislative developments in terms of the statutory rights, statutory duties and the rights. So in the Young People Anti-Trafficking Project in the Law Centre, we provide legal advice and representation to people under the age of 25 who are suspected of having been subjected to exploitation in the form of trafficking. Of the clients that we presently have, 8 were children at the time when the exploitation took place, and of those 8, 2 are now young adults. So we still represent 6 children going through the NRM process, which for us as an organisation, the numbers have gone up exponentially in the last 18 months. There's been a significant increase in those figures. They present with suspected sexual exploitation, labour exploitation and unknown exploitation, which is not unusual in the cases of children for various understandable and complex reasons that they find it difficult to articulate the experiences. Perhaps they've disassociated from the trauma that they suffered, or they simply didn't identify themselves as victims because maybe their family members were involved in sending them abroad. Our clients come from Africa, Europe, Asia and the Middle East. So again, that's quite an extensive range of nationalities for us as an organisation that has extended in the last 18 months. Looking then at the National Crime Agency, the NCA's Northern Ireland statistics for the calendar period of 2014, January to December, of the 45 referrals made into the NRM out of Northern Ireland, 8 were children, 3 girls, 5 boys. That represents 18% of the total Northern Ireland figure for that period. Those are the countries that they have come from, and they have presented with cases of sexual exploitation, labour exploitation, and the majority being unknown. 6 were referred by the trusts, who are the main referrers into the NRM for children, and 2 by the PSNI. And now the most recent publicly available figures by the NCA cover the first 3 months of this year, and it informs us that 2 boys, a Chinese and Romanian citizen, have been referred into the NRM, one in relation to suspected labour exploitation, the other, it's as yet unknown. And again, it was the Trust and it was the PSNI who referred. So the NRM, which you have heard about, was introduced in April 2009. In 2011, the Department of Health and the PSNI introduced guidance in the form of working arrangements for welfare and safeguarding of child victims of human trafficking. And this was recognised as just not being specifically for social workers and the police, but as best practice guidance for all frontline agencies who may come into contact with children who present with human trafficking indicators, as they're called. So the guidance informed us that children going through this process, the NRM process, must benefit from all the support provisions contained in the Children Order. So the best interest principle applies, and that's irrespective of their immigration status. It informs that the preference is for accommodation to be in a children's home or for them to reside with an experienced foster carer. Since autumn 2014, Glenmona Resource Centre has been the designated residential care home for all children entering into Northern Ireland from outside of the EU, from outside Northern Ireland. It's a pilot. And from what we have observed and heard from the children that we represent who are residing there, this is a very positive experience. What it has enabled is, for the first time, the galvanising of knowledge and experience of people who are living with the children in the home. That enables staff there to understand what the trafficking indicators are, what the NRM process is, how it operates. They have built up a good network with interpreters, with legal representatives, and also to understand cultural differences, religious differences, facilitate needs, and the particular vulnerabilities of children who are going through the NRM process, and in many cases, a dual asylum process as well. So that's a very positive experience. In terms of experienced foster carers, as I understand it, there are still no trained and supported foster carers in Northern Ireland who can accommodate children going through the NRM process. Evidence tells us that children who are in the NRM are at risk, or who even are about to be referred into the NRM, are at risk of going missing, traffickers hold a very strong link with them. They're at risk of going missing, and that risk is heightened literally within the first few hours of coming to the attention of the authorities. So it's very important that the link with the traffickers is stopped at the earliest possible stage. And providing the child in a home setting with the opportunity of building up a trusting relationship on a one-to-one basis with a supportive adult in the form of an experienced, supported foster care is something that we would welcome, and we hope that we see that developing. The guidance also referred to protocols in relation to interviews and investigations between the police and social workers, and we believe rightly so also said that children attending interviews with the police should be accompanied by solicitors, and we would extend that to immigration interviews as well. So then moving on, the 2011 directive came into effect in April 2013, and it confirmed what we already knew, that the best interest principle applies to these children, but that it is primary consideration in these cases. Where there is an age dispute case, the presumption is that the individual will be treated as a child until it is proved otherwise and therefore benefit from all the support provisions available to children. And it talks about a short and long term support system for that child based on an individual assessment of their needs until a durable solution is found. And what a durable solution is depends completely from case to case. It may be that the child should be given permission to remain if they require immigration permission, to enable them to avail of support services to try and get them back to some place where they were before they were exploited. Or it may be in their best interests, with the child's consent, to return home to family members. It will depend on each case. It talked about the appointment of a guardian, and I'll come to that again when we talk about our own act. It sets out protections which should be put in place, particularly with regards to children being interviewed as witnesses in criminal proceedings, and recognises the particular vulnerabilities of unaccompanied children. So that came into effect in April 2013, and in June of that same year, Lord Morrow introduced his private member's bill before the Northern Ireland Assembly. As an organisation, we were wholly supportive of that, of the introduction of a single piece of legislation which would deal with human trafficking and exploitation. And particularly, we were very supportive and lobbying strongly in relation to two aspects. One was to put the support provisions for adults onto a statutory footing, which we now have, and for the introduction for the first time in the UK of an independent legal guardian for children going through this process. The guardianship provisions in section 21 includes separated children, and we were quite forceful in our position that we wanted separated children to be included, not just children who have actually been introduced into the NRM process. And that is because it enables a child who enters Northern Ireland subject to immigration control to, as I've said, build up that relationship with social services, with the guardian when that's up and running, and possibly disclose instances of trafficking which they will not have disclosed at the outset. It's not normal for children to provide this information, in my experience, in your first or even second or third meeting. So it captures a much broader group than children who have been referred or about to be referred into the NRM, and we're very pleased with that. As Julie mentioned earlier today, it introduces a defence for children who are in suspected situations of slavery or trafficking, where they're found in a situation where it's suspected that criminal activities have taken place. And it sets out protection for children, as well as adults, but for children when they are witnesses in criminal investigations. So I want to look at section 21 because this sets out the role of the guardian, and we believe that the independent guardian will streamline the experiences of these children. So if you think of a child who arrives in Northern Ireland, doesn't speak the language, never been out of their home country before, never been in Northern Ireland before, and suddenly they are faced with a myriad of very complex procedures that they have got to deal with. So there's health, education, coming to meet with their legal representatives at the law centre, social services, the police, and in some cases, immigration. And those complex procedures require complex, difficult decisions to be made. So we believe that a guardian will streamline that experience, will keep the child informed, and particularly important for the age group where an order is rarely sought, and that's the 16 and a half to 18-year-old age groups. Court orders are not applied for in most circumstances, and certainly never in relation to the children we represent all of the children we represent are between 16 and a half and 18. And the NCA statistics tell us that I think for the last 2 years, all the children referred into the NRM from Northern Ireland are within that age group as well. So those children do not have parents here, they don't have legal guardians, and they don't benefit from a corporate parent. We believe that the independent legal guardian in Section 21 will fill that role to a large extent. So just looking very briefly at what is a long list of responsibilities for the individual. So they must ascertain and communicate the views of the child. They must be UNCRC compliant in that regard. They must make representations to and liaise with bodies and individuals who make decisions about, as we've touched on, health education. They can instruct a solicitor, which I think is an excellent provision, because it allows the guardian to say they are not doing what they said they would do. They are not acting in the child's best interest. So I'm going to speak to the child and we are going to instruct another solicitor. They must consult regularly with the child and keep the child informed of legal and other proceedings. And they must contribute to the plan to safeguard and promote the future of the child based on an individual assessment of the child's best interests. And they provide a link between the child and anybody or person who provides services to the child. They assist in contacting members of the child's family with the child's consent and only if it's in the child's best interests, and accompany the child to the meetings. And very importantly and very interestingly, that any person or body that provides services or takes administrative decisions must recognise and pay due regard to the functions of the guardian, and must provide the guardian with access to information relating to the child that will enable the guardian to carry out functions effectively. And in order for a guardian to fully carry out its functions, that provision has got to be in Section 21, and we are absolutely delighted that it is. So what do we have now in Northern Ireland, and what are we looking forward to? Glamona Resource Centre is very positive. It is a pilot. We hope that that will continue, and we look forward to seeing the outcome of the pilot decision. The NRM review that Clara has already talked about, yes, absolutely. We are delighted that the proposal and the recommendation is to move away from the Home Office being the sole decision maker in relation to children who are subject to immigration control. We look forward to seeing what the multidisciplinary panels are going to look like, how that's going to work in Northern Ireland, who's going to sit on those panels. But it's certainly a very positive move in the right direction. The 2015 Act with the independent guardianship provisions is something that we are absolutely delighted with. It's a very progressive piece of legislation. We should be very proud of our Assembly voting this through. In terms of when that's going to commence, the question mark is there, because most of Section 21 is supposed to commence 10 months after the Act received Royal Assent, which is in November. But there is a section in Section 21 whereby the Department of Health has got to draft regulations. We understand that's ongoing at the moment. But it was with disappointment that we read in a DOJ consultation paper that the timeline for them being laid before the Assembly is the 31st of March 2016. It needs to be done thoroughly, it needs to be done properly, and we look forward to being engaged in that consultation process. Thank you very much. Thank you.